pulling back the curtain of silence
and learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala.
This is Seen.
Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
How are you feeling about doing this
fucking
topic?
Weird, man. For me anyways, when I was like a kid, I always knew like family is the most important thing. And it's really entrenched, I think, into like culture.
Yeah.
And that's a healthy thing if your family is healthy for you and is nourishing for you. And I'm lucky to have like a really nourishing family and really supportive family and really loving family. But like, no one's perfect.
Yeah.
And it's awkward, I think, sometimes to air what feels like dirty laundry,
mm-hmm.
because we straight up live in a culture where you're like not supposed to talk about a lot of things.
No.
Especially what happens in your family. Especially if the things that happen in your family cause you to like seek support and love and community and relationships with like other people. Maybe not to replace them, but to like supplement.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. So, you know, you said, that we're all raised with this idea that family is like the most important thing. So I was reading the article our good friend Daniela Barreto wrote, We Can't Fuck Ourselves Out of Racism.
Okay, yeah.
And so we've all heard the phrase, blood is thicker than water.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that she said, actually, what the full quote is the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. And it actually, a lot of people think it means like the opposite, that like the experiences that you have together, like being like blood sisters or like, you know, going
like
through kind of the
family.
Fire. Yeah. No, like going through the fire together, like soldiers who bleed together, you know,
that
is actually stronger than just having been born in the same family.
But yeah.
And she talked about some of the things that we're talking about today, too, like how hard it is sometimes to be around family, which, you know, for me, Danielle and I have different identities, but something that we share is that some of our identities that are some of the most important things about how we're perceived in the world and what our experience of the world is, things that we don't share with our family. So having racial identities that, you know, my mom doesn't share, being queer when nobody in my immediate family is queer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like one of the things that's difficult about this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she talked a bit about family and painful experiences she's had in her family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I'm so aware of going into this episode, that like it's trying to balance the fact that I love my family and I have so much empathy and compassion. And I know that, you know, my parents did the best that they could and that it was really good in a lot of ways. They gave me a lot. And there's so much hurt that I've experienced, or there's been so many needs that weren't met for me that I've had to look outside of the family, and I've had to really like invest in my closest people being outside of my biological family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard, like trying to hold all those things, trying to like be honest about your experience, but not wanting to hurt the people that you love.
Yeah. And then like also hold all those experiences, and then like hold the nuances between like there was love, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't like also harm that could have happened at the same time.
Exactly.
And then there's this feeling of like not wanting to, for me anyways, like not wanting to give other people the wrong impression about what my experience in my family has been like, because it's been really like a lot of joy and a lot of support, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
But then there are also things that like my mom is my parent, and like that's the only parent that I have in my life. She doesn't come equipped with all the things, and that's not, I think there's some normalcy to that, because parents come to us with their own trauma and their own experiences,
their
own shit as well. And there's this feeling of like needing to, and for my mom anyways, like protect her.
Yeah.
Because I know that she oftentimes judges herself so much more than I ever think I could. Like,
yeah.
And I have past judgments on the things that my mom will do or say and things that have happened in the past. And I know that like she did the best that she could, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reality of parenting, and that's the reality of like siblings, is like we do the best that we can with what we're afforded or what we're given at the time. That doesn't necessarily mean that like somebody else's best is good enough for you. That's kind of tough to brush up against and then publicize and like talk about. And I also want to add the added layer of like, we're both not white. There's already a lot of speculation and like critique about brown and black families and how they operate and like broken families. Right. And like, we're both like the poster children for those things. Like, that's great. Like, you know, so it's one of those things where you're like, you don't also want to play into whatever stereotypes people have about quote unquote like dysfunction in your family, because it feels like you're giving like people who wish for your demise anyways like more fodder to feed off of.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge factor. And I also think something you were kind of hitting on is that we put mothers on this pedestal.
Right.
And so it's very like socially taboo to criticize your mother or to speak about harm that you've experienced from your mother. But I think also part of that pedestal is that by trying to make mothers, you know, these angels, we expect perfection from them.
Right.
And I think that's something that makes motherhood so, so hard is this expectation from everybody that you're going to be perfect. And I think what goes along with that, too, is huge amounts of shame when you aren't this, like, saint. I think that is something that I really feel in speaking about my experience growing up, that, like, there are things that really went wrong for me, but I like want to protect my mom from like the possibility of having those feelings of shame, because, you know, I'm able to hold the fact that I've been very hurt in a lot of ways, and that she did the absolute best she could and she was there every day. Like, there's never been a time that I, you know, called my mom and she didn't pick up and like try her best,
totally.
You know? And I think that that's what really matters at the end of the day. But I also needed more.
Yeah. And I think like you're hitting on it right now as well, is like, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
To be here, like to be sitting with you, to be like, to be the people that we are. And like, I don't know if this is something that resonates with you, but for me, and I think for a lot of folks who were like, or kids of immigrants, it's like your parents have done so much for you to like be here. They came here for you to like have a better life. So like, how dare you critique or have suggestions for next time or have any kind of cool notes for how things could have been better or kind of push back on any of those things. I think it's there's a lot of fear sometimes that we feel in just naming the things that we didn't receive from our families, and that can lead us into a space of not wanting to speak out and say there are things that like I definitely know I can't count on my mom for, you know. And that's not to say that she's not supportive in countless other ways. It's just recognizing like people have strengths and there's weaknesses people have as well. And I can only speak for myself, because I was very fortunate to not like grow up in a family where my closest caregiver, my mom, like was harmful to us in any way. She was really, really affirming of who we were, who my sisters were, in our blackness specifically. Like, that was always kind of her vantage point, and the way that she wanted to tell us that she loved us was always about like, you're beautiful and you're intelligent and you're smart and don't let anybody ever tell you otherwise. But that doesn't necessarily mean that like when you grow up and to be an adult, you can carry those things, but you can still carry other hurts that you accumulate over the course of your life that your mom's nourishing words maybe can't be the balm to fix.
Yeah, so I'd be curious to ask you, like, do you remember when you realized that friendships could take that role? That when you realized that you needed relationships outside of your biological family to fill some of those most intimate needs, or when you first experienced a friend that was family for you?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a really good question. Probably when I was in middle school. At the beginning of my mom's fourth pregnancy with my sister Joanna, I was like in a lot of like turmoil, because I was like, mom, you're so, I'm going to show my ass in a second. I was really, really mad at my mom for getting pregnant. I was just like not happy that she was going to have another kid. I was like 12 and really like in this feeling of like, I'm a middle child. I feel like I don't have enough attention. Like, we're going to have another, like another one. Like, it's just like, you're too old. I was really, really judgmental about it. And then, you know, out came Joe, and like, I love this kid so much, my little sister. I would never not want her to be here. But like when you're 12, you don't have you have such big feelings.
Yeah.
And so I think I was really, really fortunate to have like a brat pack of like girlfriends who really held me down And one of my good friends, both of her parents would always just be like, just call me mama and papa. So like that was something that I grew up with. And to this day, I still call them mama and papa because like they've just always been there. Mm. And I still call my friends grandma Lola. Like it's just like that's part of it. And but then like I think I learned really quickly throughout having friends who became family that like sometimes those people still let you down. Yeah. And I think like that was something that I learned at the end of high school, and then I learned that again in university, where it was like, oh, like I can't trust people who I've been friends with for so long because like eventually they'll show their ass or like they'll have their own shit popping off and like they won't be there for me. So I kind of retreated back into like being ferociously like family or nothing in my early 20s. But I've always had people around me who've like made it known that I was welcome around them. And I still have like those people are still in my life. It's just like our relationships have changed over time.
Right.
Yeah. How about you? Like you grew up in rural BC and you mentioned like being raised by white women specifically.
Yeah.
Like did you have other racialized friends who you were able to like no.
No. Okay. Yeah, there was like one Chinese girl that I was friends with for most of my schooling, but we weren't super like emotionally intimate. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it was mostly white. There weren't any brown girls my age in my hometown. But I really grew up with it being very like explicitly set out that family is the most important thing. Mm. Your friends are not your family. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, so much things that happen inside the family, stay inside the family.
Right.
So it took a long time to maybe realize there was, well, you know what? It wasn't even it took a long time. It was meeting the right person. So the person that became my best friend that I met in first year university, that relationship very quickly became home for me. It mm-hmm. became like a safety that I had never experienced before. But I also remember then my mom, and with no ill intentions, but still kind of giving me that message that mm-hmm. like that's just your friend,
like know who your like loyalty is supposed to lie to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for both of us, my friend and I, queerness is very wrapped up in this. Mm-hmm. For us, we both identified as straight at the time. Mm-hmm. Although we had a very romantic friendship. Mm-hmm. But I guess for me, there's like a lot of pain around that like I remember one time I was home visiting and some really horrible things were happening to my friend who I lived with. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to start saying her name. It's Mal. Mm-hmm. So Mal was back at our place in Vancouver and some really awful things were happening. And I wanted to go back to Vancouver to be with her. Mm-hmm. And my mom really shut that down and was like, no, like this is just your friend. This isn't a thing that you do. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like honestly out of love and just I had moved out and she just wanted to see me and didn't want me to leave sooner.
Okay.
But there's a lot of pain around that for me because I just think about like what my relationship with Mal could have been if, you know, our queerness hadn't been so like stamped out in us. And if those messages of like, this is just like a same gender friend, like right. stop prioritizing her yeah. like that, you know, like if I'd had a boyfriend I lived with
yeah.
that needed me, my mom would have been like, go.
Right. And it's kind of like this like disregard or like it's a flippant like kind of.
Yeah.
It's minimizing right, yeah. of the friendship that has been so foundational in like keeping you grounded and like being your home base, like you said.
Yeah.
And to have somebody that's like your mom who you love and who, you know, loves you not see that and yeah. not see what it's like the good things that it's doing for you, I can imagine is like really hurtful.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. And I think, and this is like a less extreme example than a lot of like queer and trans people have experienced in their families because, you know, there was a lot of my family's very white liberal. So, mm-hmm. like, they definitely on paper were pro-gay.
Sure.
But there's a lot of just ways, like the example I just shared, that unintentionally in practice they were not. Mm-hmm. A lot of queer people don't even have that, you know. A lot of people come from families that are very anti. But I think these kinds of things and that whole spectrum of experience are part of the reason why queer and trans people, I feel like, created this idea of chosen family,
mm-hmm.
right? And, yeah. like, and really nurturing each other and caring for each other and, you know, being the one at the hospital,
yeah.
you know, when you're sick or at end of life,
yeah.
you know, all of those things where sometimes the people that feel like home to you, you have to find them outside of where you grew up.
I want to talk a little bit about a TV show that you've been watching where, like, friendship and chosen family is something that is really prominent as a theme.
If you haven't watched Pose on FX.
FX, right?
Yeah. You need to. And you can buy it on iTunes. And you really should. It's a beautiful, beautiful show. Janet Mock is one of the producers and writers.
Love her.
Yeah. And, like, the cast, there's so many Black and brown, queer and trans people in the cast and portraying these incredible characters. It's a really special show that I would just encourage everybody to check out. But one of the most beautiful things about it is that it really portrays chosen family in that truest, highest sense, where it's people who, you know, in a world that is very hostile to their existence, are taking care of each other, nourishing each other, raising each other, really. Yeah. You know, a lot of people have to leave home very young and they're not able to be mentored into the place that they are going to occupy in the world because their families don't know and maybe are even hostile to the people that they are. And so finding those people who can give you that mentorship, who care for you, who are, like, in the hospital with you when you're sick, who make sure you eat, who make up for those, you know, they love you in ways that heals a lot of those harms and those traumas. That's, like, the most beautiful thing about the show is witnessing that kind of, like, chosen motherhood, chosen family. Yeah, it's such a beautiful thing.
For the longest time, I've always thought about chosen family, and I never thought about it in that context, especially before I identified as bisexual, because I've always known the idea of I've always understood the idea of chosen family because, like, as a person whose parents are immigrants, like, it was really normal for us to always call, like, so-and-so's parents, like, uncle or auntie or, like, cousins or, like, play cousins. Like, those kinds of things are really normal. And you revere people and you call those people family because it's, like, oh, they're your parents' friends, so they're uncle and auntie.
Right.
And so, like, I thought that was, like, okay, that's normal. To my friends who weren't of color or whose families weren't immigrants, were like, you have so many uncles and aunts and, like, whatever. And I'm like, no, it's just, like, we just say that to say that.
Yeah.
But I think the difference being between chosen family and that is that that is something that's really placed on you by your parents.
Right.
You know, it's, again, like, it's not something that you actually choose. It's like your parents chose that family and now that's your family. That might be something really supportive and awesome for you, but it's not something that you have much agency over because you're still kind of bound in that.
And so often, like, the people your parents choose are going to maybe let you down in the same ways that your parents do unintentionally. I have to keep saying unintentionally because I'm still, you can hear, like, the fear of, you know, not wanting to hurt my family. But there's this book called Far from the Tree by Andrew Solomon. And it talks about when there's these big disconnects between parents and their kids. And one of the things he talks about is vertical identities versus horizontal identities.
Okay.
So vertical identities are the things that are, like, passed down from your parents.
So, and, like, so race.
For a lot of people, race.
Yeah.
Whereas horizontal identities are ones that don't necessarily have anything to do with your heritage. And so, like, being queer is a prime example of that. Well, for me, my racial identity also, I don't share with my mother. And so, again, like, being in that white liberal environment, there was nobody from my family or the close friends of my family that was able to give me what I needed, which was an understanding of what it means to be brown in a white supremacist society.
That really requires you then to have to go and seek that out somewhere else.
Yeah, but it was so hard to even know to do that because white people don't talk about race.
Right.
If anything, they'll talk a little bit about culture, maybe.
Okay.
And so I think there was a little bit of that of my mom, like, wanting to try to be supportive of, like, you know, Indian culture being important. Of course, you know, that's pretty hard for, like, a white person to do, you know, on their own when there's no, like, Indian community around you. But she did. I think she did try.
Yeah.
But white people in general don't talk about race. So nobody was talking about race around me. And it was something I had to kind of try to
put pieces together yourself.
Yeah. Or... And it was very confusing for me. I didn't understand how race worked. Like, I was, as, like, a young child, like, the only, like, narratives that I sort of heard in the media was, like, black and white. And I was like, okay, like, so are those the only two options? Does that mean that I'm, my dad is black?
Yeah.
Like, and I remember, like, asking my mom that, and this is, you know, the early 90s, so conversations weren't being had. But right. I remember asking my mom if my dad was black. And she said something like, no, he's very specific that he's not black, he's brown. Like, she made it sound like it was, like, his
words,
like, weird thing. Like, he's gotcha. As opposed to just, like, oh, no, black means this, and, like,
brown means this, that, and you're brown.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it was very confusing. And then I think it was maybe when I was, like, 12, 13, and I was starting to, like, maybe be able to pick up some words from, like, books and media and things like that. And so I was trying to, like, start talking about race and my experiences of racism that, you know, often were subtle. It wasn't like people, like, yelling racial slurs at me.
Yeah.
But it was very felt.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to tell my mom that I felt like people were racist against me, and she told me that, because so Trail has a big Italian population.
Okay.
And she said, no one can even tell you're not white. They all think you're Italian.
Oh.
And I was like,
listen, people, like, if you look at Prem, she don't look Italian. I just want everybody to know this girl does not look Italian. Sorry.
No, it's so true. Yeah. And on so many levels, like, this is, like, what gaslighting is.
Mm,
and again, right. Like, I mean, she didn't know how to, like, make it better for me. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, her way of trying to, like, be like, oh, no, don't worry. Like, don't be self-conscious kind of thing. But, like, on so many levels, it was like, first of all, yeah, I'm like, I don't look Italian. That's not a thing.
I've
I don't look
Italians.
Like any of the Italians that live here. That's not true.
Oh, wow.
But also, like, on another level, like, I didn't want to be Italian.
Yep. And that's the thing. It's right? like, okay, let's skip the step and let's call you something completely different as opposed to being like, this is what you are and what you are is valid.
Yeah. And, like, you know, there's people in the world maybe that are racist and, like, fuck those people
totally.
Because who you are is beautiful.
Yeah.
Instead, it was just sort of like, oh, don't worry. Like, nobody can tell what you really are, which is like, oh.
That's even scarier because now you're like, okay, well, you won't even say what I really am. Like, you can't even identify what I really am or, like, speak to it. And it makes – I'm guessing there was some discomfort for her. Like, I'm assuming that's what it is. I
think she was just trying – yeah, I don't know. I think she was just trying to, like, make the problem go away for me, and that was the only way that she knew how to do it.
Right.
But it was so, like – I mean, it was so confusing, too, because, again, like, it's me kind of testing out, like, this is a thing that I feel. And, like, I feel like – you know, I'm experiencing racism. And then when someone's like, no, you're not, then it's like, okay, then does everybody just hate me? Like, I don't know why people look at me different. I don't know why people respond to me differently. And so what is it about me that makes people treat me this way if it's not that? So it just gave me this, like, deep sense of, like, shame and inadequacy. I mean, not just that one comment. I mean, like, of experiencing racism and not knowing for sure what it was and not having support to understand what it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was in university and it was through social media that I first met somebody who validated me and was like, yeah, all those feelings you've been having your whole life, you're actually not crazy. Like, that's actually happening.
Yeah. I want to ask, like, when you were trying to have these conversations with your mom, do you think that she kind of felt ill-equipped to have those conversations with you, and, like, by virtue you just stopped talking to her about that? Or, like, how did you kind of move from trying to see who you were in your mom, like, through your mom, and, like, you know, seek it outside of that?
I think just over time, and not necessarily at a conscious level, I think I just learned that as much as my mom loved me and, you know, and expressed and showed her love for me, I couldn't get my emotional needs met from her. And that if I tried to go to her with these, like, really vulnerable things, that I would usually leave those conversations feeling worse.
Mm. Yeah.
And especially because, you know, my mom has never been malicious in any way, shape, or form. Like, she's always wanted the best for me and wanted to do her best for me and has tried her best for me. And so that was part of why it felt so bad.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't getting my needs met and I didn't know why. And so I think, again, it felt like it must be something wrong with me.
Yeah.
So, and then it wasn't until I was an adult and started to meet people who were able to mirror me and validate me and like understand me and mm-hmm. see me and create that kind of safety that comes from just being heard and mm-hmm. seen, that I realized why those things had felt so bad before.
Totally. It's really troubling because I think so often when we have conversations about family, we only think about it in like the normative sense. Mm-hmm. And so we think of like, okay, yeah, like family means like you have a nuclear family, like it's made with a woman and a man, and they mm-hmm. like get married, and they get married so they can have a baby, and it's about procreation. And mm-hmm. so when your like normative family doesn't give you the things you want, you're like, okay, well, I'm fucked up then, because this yeah. is the normal shit. Like,
yeah.
this is supposed to all work. And no one, we don't really get to have conversations about like when family doesn't give you what you need or yeah. what you can do. And we're not like taught about those kinds of things. We're taught about friendship and like mm-hmm. how to share and all those kinds of things, but we're not actually like also teaching kids, hey, what does it look like when you're not receiving the respect or the love or the tenderness mm-hmm. or the like other things that you need as a child? How do you seek that support that you need when you're a kid? All that amounts to is like a lot of isolation, like you were saying. I think for me, I've started to recognize how in my own life and in my own family experiences, having like my dad left, I felt a lot of fucked upness. Mm-hmm. And that's been the impetus for me is like starting therapy. But for me, and we're not going to really talk about like therapy the full extent today, but I think I started to recognize like when the standard that I had or the expectations that I had of my sisters were unfair, because I had expected them to like help me through all of my shit and all my trauma, because we've right. all had the same, like, we've had the same family experience, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it started to really dawn on me more recently, our sisters, for me anyways, my sisters are always going to be there for me. They're always going to validate how I'm feeling. They're always going to be there to be like, yeah, that was fucked up what dad did, or, you know, that kind of thing. But I have to recognize as well when I'm like, my expectations for them are so much higher than like they can see through. They're also struggling through their own shit. They also have like their own vantage point that's stuck in the same muck that I'm stuck in too. And when you start, like for me, I started to realize like, oh, I actually need to go outside of my family to like find this support, even though it's about my family. Like it felt like a weird, it felt really uncomfortable for me to like start going to see a therapist and talk about my mom and talk about my family and talk about like family roles and like the role that I've played and feeling like, I guess over time I felt like kind of stuck in that role of like 12-year-old Nicole, and I've really done a lot of growing and it's been really intentional, and in some points I ended up feeling like I didn't feel like my mom was seeing me for who I was now, and that's difficult sometimes to try to like get somebody else to unlearn something about what they think you are. But yeah, like I started to recognize that my family loves me a lot, but like they can't solve my problems for me, even though they know the problems too because they were there. But I think there was a lot of fear that I had about going to therapy and talking about family stuff. Now I feel a lot more comfortable because I'm talking about it with you right mm-hmm. now. But there was a lot of judgment of like, why can't I just figure this out on my own? Why can't I move through my dad leaving us all on my own? Why can't I move through these experiences that I've had as a Black woman all like on my own, or like with the support of my family? Because like you're really always kind of taught that like family, and back to the normative, like, you know, the idea of family is like, this is supposed to be it. You're supposed to be able to find everything in your family. It definitely made me kind of question, like, so when is it okay? When is it okay to, like, put what I want and what I need for myself before what my family needs from me?
Right.
You know, and I guess in your case, maybe what your family needed from you is for you not to talk about your experiences as a brown girl, as a brown woman, because they didn't know how to receive those experiences. They don't know what to do with those experiences because they themselves weren't having conversations about race. So how can they even talk about who you are?
Yeah, it's often felt that way. And also like in university when I was really going through it in terms of sexual violence, but you know, my family wanted, they tried to be there for me, but they just really weren't able to give me what I needed. Mm-hmm. And there was so much pain around that for me. But then I think a lot of times, you know, maybe we're just, yeah, we came from the same bloodline, but we're on very different like paths and we have very different things to do in the world.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because there's so much pressure on, you know, family meeting all your needs. But then for me, at least, when I learned to stop going to them for the things that they couldn't give me.
Yep. That's the light bulb.
I think it took so much pressure off of everybody.
Totally.
You know, like there mm-hmm. wasn't so much like hurt being like piled upon hurt, because I just went to people who were maybe on more similar paths to me, or like yeah. had more similar like personality types, or were doing more similar work where like yeah. I could get that support I needed there, and I wasn't asking someone for it who didn't have it to give. And then right. you know, like yes. there can just be a little bit less tension, maybe, hopefully. I mean, there isn't always, but I think, again, I'm not like piling on like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened anymore, because I'm just like not going and putting myself in that situation yeah. as much. So I'm curious if that happened for you too, where like when you started going to therapy or like going outside of your family, that it maybe like took some pressure off.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Like what you're saying just kind of makes me think of this idea of compartmentalizing. Mm. And we always kind of think about it like that's a bad thing to do. But I think as far as our own personal needs are,
yeah.
compartmentalizing is a really helpful thing, because we have to recognize like, so my mom can give me, like my mom is an excellent hype woman when it comes to, she's very motivating. She's always like, I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you. Like she's a good validator of when fuck shit happens. I'll be like, mommy, guess what happened? And she gets mad with me and stuff like that. But she's not really good at having conversations about like meta topics, like the things that we talk about, or the things I talked about with my sister, or the things that I used to talk about with my dad. Even my mom, that's not her forte. And I started to recognize like that I was putting all my eggs in one basket, and then I was like, my expectations were so much greater than what she could actually afford or give me. And what she could give me was that like, you go girl, and like let's get mad together. And I've learned to like accept that and be like, okay, now that I've accepted that, it, like you said, it takes so much pressure off, because now I'm not waiting for her to like say, and you know, I read this article about the person in the pipeline. We can talk about these things in like sound bites, but I think I've changed my expectations, and I think it's difficult because you're not taught to do that, and it feels like almost a betrayal when you're like, okay, I'm just gonna like not expect my mom to do these things for me.
Yeah,
because she's always wanted to be the everything person. Mm-hmm. She's always, similar to your mom, like she's never not been there. She's always showed up when she could show up. But I've just got, I think it's virtue of growing older and recognizing like, yo, there's other resources out there. There are other people out there that can love me and support me in the things that I'm doing that my mom maybe can't, or my sisters maybe can't do. Even in the context of like me being a newly minted bisexual. Like I've talked to my sisters about it. I've talked about it to some folks. I haven't like spoken about it, so I'm saying it here. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that I've talked to my mom about, because I'm also aware of like, I think there's a little bit of fear. And also recognizing that like she's not been very good about talking about the nuanced things, and so I don't know how this would land as well. And I'm happy where things are. So part of it feels like I'm withholding information, but I'm also feeling like I'm protecting who I am and protecting my own energy in a really thoughtful and intentional way. And I'm happy with that choice. And when she finds out, or should she find out, I don't feel like I need to be apologetic about it.
Right.
Because I think that's oftentimes this idea of like withholding secrets, like secrets are supposed to be shared in the family, and family secrets can't be shared anywhere else. And I've started to disrupt that, because I'm like, you know, when I need to talk about shit that's happened between me and my mom that's like, you know, made me kind of upset, I'm going to talk about it with my partner. I'm going to talk about it with you. We'll talk about it with like whoever I need to. And like there's no cap on like, there shouldn't be anyways. I guess there shouldn't be any cap as to like who you feel like you shouldn't tell these things to.
Yeah, I think, like you said, compartmentalizing doesn't always have to be a bad thing. I think another way of understanding that or saying that too would be that it's about boundaries sometimes. And like boundaries exist to protect us from harm, and they exist to protect our capacities. And if we're really tuned in, our systems will let us know. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times as a therapist, something that comes up a lot with clients, and I've done this in my own work as well, is there's all these kind of societal stories about what boundaries we're allowed to have, what boundaries are okay or not okay. Like the idea that what happens in the family stays inside the family no matter what, or things like that are just sort of like arbitrary. They don't work for everybody.
Right.
And so part of the work, I think, is learning to connect with your own system and figure out, because your system will let you know. It's like very well designed to protect us, to help us survive. So when something's going on that's like violating our boundaries, our system will let us know, and it's our job to just listen and not judge.
Totally.
So we might feel anger when our boundaries are being violated. That's a big sign. We might feel resentment. We might feel drained. All of these things. And when that's happening, I think we really owe it to ourselves to protect ourselves by figuring out where to put those boundaries.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think thinking specifically about brown and black women and girls.
Yeah.
Listening to your body,
yeah,
I think is really, really important to keep on highlighting, because it's really easy for all of us to feel like what's happening in our body isn't real.
Yeah, or what we're experiencing. Told it's
yeah,
wrong.
It's like, or like you said, like you had a conversation with your mom when yeah. you were younger about like, I feel like I'm experiencing racism. I feel like people are being racist towards me. And that's something you feel in your fucking gut.
Yeah.
You feel it on your face and yeah. you can't not see it, especially when you're the recipient of
yeah.
it. And it's so nuanced that so many white folks, too many white folks, most white folks don't have the propensity or the lens to put on and see those things for what they actually are. So then we become, as brown and black women, like really, really numb to the things that are happening in our bodies, and we just explain it away like, oh, that's just me, I'm gonna fucking it's fine. And the flight yeah. or fight is so real, everyone has that. But I think trusting it and then acting on that trust, a lot of us aren't taught to do that.
Well, yes, and so it's fight or flight, but it can also become freeze. That's
right.
like part of that same response. And mm-hmm. I think especially for us as black and brown women, we're not allowed to express our anger.
Mm-hmm.
We are very much punished for expressing our anger, from, you know, having interpersonal consequences to being literally policed
right.
for expressing anger. If we have a boundary come up, if something, if we want to express harm against us, we're told we're crazy, we're told we're too sensitive, we're told, you know, we're bitches,
yeah.
whatever else it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And so our capacity to fight is stamped out. We usually start learning that at a very young age. And our capacity to flee is often not there. And so what the system ends up doing is freezing.
Totally.
Right? And that's why for so many of us, it becomes this like forced silence.
Patriarchy was such a like strong presence in my household when my dad was around.
Yeah.
So my expressing of anger was never, it was freeze.
Yeah.
Because it was like freeze or like, or what? Like, see what you're going to do. You want to cry?
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
And even if I was the recipient of the harm, like it didn't really matter if like my father was the one to be the instigator of something. It was like there was no winning.
Yeah.
And so it's not just about society. It's also about the relationships that we have.
It's at every level.
It's at every level.
Yeah. And that's how those lessons are. That's why they're so powerful, because they're happening at the micro level, at the macro level.
Mm-hmm.
And they start so young
yep.
that like our entire nervous system becomes, you know, shaped around that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so many of us are alienated from our anger or from our fight response.
Totally.
And so we're not able to take action to protect ourselves, which is
yeah.
why healing work is so important. And then that ties into the political too, because like our world would be a lot better if all of us, and especially those who have been the most marginalized, we're able to set the boundaries that we need to prevent harm. Because
yeah.
if you look at our world, like writ large, it is just harm at every level,
yeah.
from person to person to the planet.
Yeah.
Right? And if we were all empowered to stop harm wherever we see it, our world would be so much more safe and healthy and healed. We wouldn't be at this like apocalyptic moment.
Oh, it's apocalyptic. Both of us are in places now where we've enacted a lot of agency in choosing people who are in our
yeah.
lives, who are supportive of us. And I just want to ask you, like, what are qualities in your exacting of agency and your selecting of people to be your chosen family and people who are around you, who you choose to be there? What qualities do they possess, or what qualities do those relationships possess?
So much of it for me, Pisces rising, I like I go so much off of how it feels.
Yeah.
And so when I spend time with somebody, when it makes me feel nourished, when it makes me feel
right.
energized,
yeah.
that's something I really look for. When I feel like I can say what I'm feeling and be who I am and be accepted and be loved and not be undermined or shut down or questioned about that. Like when I walk away feeling stronger in who I
yeah.
am, and that's a feeling I experience that like in my gut a lot. There's like a steadiness that I feel
mm-hmm.
versus walking away feeling like this kind of shaky yep. feeling.
Yeah. Which is like you almost feel like the life was sucked out of you. Almost. Yeah. Like that's a shaky, you feel yeah. like you're like, oh, I haven't eaten in like 42 hours.
Yeah. Like, or I don't know where the ground is. I'm like, oh, again, those yeah. bad thoughts about yourself, like the shame that comes up of sort of like, oh, maybe there's just something wrong with me.
Like I need to just get over, you know.
I'm too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, those types yeah. of feelings. Yeah. So those feelings give me all the information that I need. And so then the people who give me those feelings or where our relationships support those feelings, they look very different. Their identities are different. What they do in the world, their interests, like their personalities are very different. Yeah. But that's the commonality among the people closest to me is like how they make me feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, I've always thought about people that you can walk away from and be like, I feel stronger. I feel taken care of. I feel seen. The entirety of what you express between somebody else is understood, even if maybe their experiences are different.
Yeah.
The really, really awesome relationships that I have chosen, I feel like there's a generosity of like resources, and it's not just like money, but it's never really money, to be honest. It's like time. Yeah, there's a generosity of time and of love and support, and it's an unconditional set of those things. Like it's not like, okay, you did this for me, like, let me, I gotta treat you next time, or I, like, it's never felt like a tit for tat. Because there were people in my life that aren't in my life anymore that were there for a season, and I didn't recognize that, and I think I really mourned, like, and it wasn't that I mourned them leaving, it's because sometimes I was the reason that they left. I was like, you need to go, and I would act in types of ways that weren't, like, truly, and retrospectively looking back at it now, like not congruent with the person that I am. But then at the same time, they were like, I had this roommate who was incredibly, we were good friends at the time, but she was incredibly dirty. And I think I've told you this
yeah,
before.
I remember.
And she was incredibly dirty. And like, I handled the situation so poorly. This was maybe like six years ago. I think I handled it poorly, but then did I? Cause I was like, I felt like she was the kind of person who expected me to clean up after her. And I was like, I'm not Aunt Jemima. I'm actually not. I'm like, black women aren't here to like pick up after you and tell you when to clean and you know. And there was a straight up like biohazard in my apartment. So I was like, you got to go. I mean, I essentially said I got to go. And I like, you know, read her for filth because she was filthy and deserved it. But at the same time, I think I look back at that and I'm like, oh, you know, at the time I had thought like we're going to be friends for a long time. And I recognize now that that wasn't part of like the master plan, and I'm okay with it. I've made peace with it because that relationship wasn't equitable.
I think with all relationships, whether it's biological family or chosen family or, you know, any other type of relationship, there's so much to be said for just being able to see it for what it is, like being able to like accept people as they are and then make choices based on that. So maybe the point of it was like you learning a lesson about how you want to be in relationships or how
who you want to live with,
who you want to be in my space with, you know, really taking care around those things, communicating. Exactly. Totally. So it's easy to look back and be like, I wish I'd handle that differently. But I think you're looking back and seeing what you've learned. But yeah, I think again, I think maybe like another thread is like taking the pressure off of everybody, yourself and the people around you to like be something that you're not, or to like know more than you know. Like you can only know more when you learn more. Like you can't just like, you know, you can't go back in time and like know what you knew now. So being able to see things for what they are and then make choices, set boundaries based on things as they are and not as how you're told they should be or how you wish they were. So I want to talk about our Woman of Color of the Week. So I want to celebrate the brilliant, groundbreaking, beautiful, perfect Lena Waithe.
More adjectives to describe her.
There are none that are enough to describe her.
Lena, I love you.
So we've been talking about finding family, and something I love about Lena is the way she talks about other queer and trans folks, especially Black queer and trans folks, as family. And I can just really feel how much she loves all of us. So Lena broke barriers by writing and starring in the best episode and the only episode that we still acknowledge of the show, Master of None.
Right.
When she told her own coming out story.
Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah. Okay. And it was so nuanced and funny and resonant and touching.
It was quite beautiful.
And it was incredible. And she became the first Black woman to win a comedy writing Emmy for that episode.
Ah,
That was why it was so okay. Amazing.
Yeah,
love her.
And now she has the show Boomerang on BET. She executive produces and writes, and she has really complex queer characters that are so refreshing to see on TV. So there's this one episode where they're shooting a music video at Pride, and it's just the most beautiful, loving images of Black, queer, and trans folks that you will ever see.
I need to watch this show.
I know. I have never seen anything like it on TV. Wow. It's just so incredible. And she just got another show picked up called 20s that will have a Black queer woman as the main character.
Wait, what? She's just like doing it all.
She has so many jobs. Like, I just don't understand. Does she sleep? Does she have like 3 clones? Like, I don't know how she does it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's incredible. And the Chai is also a brilliant show, and it has so many, again, nuanced, complex Black characters. Yes. It's like all of these people and all of these stories that I've never seen on screen before.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And a level of mastery, like, it's just absolutely incredible what she's able to do. Mm-hmm. Like, the range of characters she's able to write and the range of stories she's able to tell, and the level of complexity that she does it with. And
it's like an humanity. Onion, like layers and layers.
Yeah. So I feel like I've been waiting my entire life for a queer woman of color like Lena to give us all the stories and the characters that we need. Yes. And deserve.
Yeah.
So thank you, Lena.
Love you, Lena.